Someone Should Make This, a show where we do the hard part of coming up with great video game ideas and offer them up to the world. My name is Danish.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Matt. And guys, floor's getting a little hot.
Oh, floor's shit.
So spicy.
So last week I talked about Floor's Lava, and last week you guys jumped into the lava, as it were.
Yep, hopped right in.
It was warm. What were your... Matt, I want you to lead me through your emotions when you first put on the show, and then like how you feel about it.
Well,
now.
I'm going to go back even further.
Okay.
Because my first foray into the Netflix attempts at game shows was the Sylvester Stallone, like, it was basically American Ninja Challenge, except Sylvester Stallone said something
what?
At the beginning. You don't
that existed?
You don't know about this? Hold
no.
up. It's not good.
I mean, I know the ones that are like really bad, like mean, like they fucking have sleep deprivation and like you're counting like pennies or something. Like it sounded awful.
It was called I'm gonna say this, the title of the show is two words, and it's basically like American Ninja Warrior starring
right.
Sylvester Stallone. What do you think the show is called?
I don't know, like Tough Enough.
Jeff, that's pretty good. Jeff, what do you got?
I mean,
do you know the answer?
I was thinking like John Rambo's Fun Zone, but that's more than two
that's
words.
That's fucking terrible. The real name is Ultimate Beastmaster.
Okay.
Oh, I think I remember seeing this.
Okay.
Yeah, so
Ultimate
the entire
Beastmaster.
The entire Jesus. Course is supposed to be like some giant dead creature. Or beast,
what?
If you will. Yeah. So it's
like a kaiju?
Yeah, like you're going into the intestines now, like shit like that.
How have I never heard of it?
Because it's
what
horrible.
Year has come out?
2017. It's not that old.
Oh my god.
It was really bad. They had celebrity guest commentators, I guess. And what was kind of cool was they had different commentators for each like country that was participating, because like the whole shtick of the show was what country's better, which is like, yeah, that's cool, that's a great thing to do. Anyway, long story short, it was bad. So when I heard about the Floor is Lava, I assumed it was going to be something like that, where it's just like kind of low effort and the editing's weird and they're trying to be funny and it's not very funny, and like the whole like, so that was my assumption. And watching the first episode, I actually did feel that way, because it was like, you know, they were sending people in. And it like they choose three teams, right? And it's basically who can get to the end of this course faster or with the most people. It's most people first, then if you tie with the amount of people, it's who did it faster. So I'm watching, and it's like one group is like these three guys who are clearly like super in shape, bodybuilders, and like they can do whatever. And then the next one is just like this family who looks like they just dragged in off the street. And
oh, the like, daughter is so not into anything.
Yeah, she doesn't want. She's just like standing at the start, like shouting things at people for most of the thing. And then I don't even remember the third family. Like it's so crazy. And I was like, this is like not a good game show, because this isn't fair at all.
No.
And then it wasn't until episode two that I realized nobody gives a fuck about this show. And that's what makes it awesome. Like nobody cares. The commentator doesn't care. The people playing don't care. Whoever set up the courses did not care to make them in any way fair. One of the ones is like the very first thing you have to do is jump on these balls that are the solar system.
Yeah.
And it's like the hardest jump you could possibly do.
I was trying to
right
wrap
off the
my
bat.
Head around it. And like, even as I'm watching that episode and everybody is doing it just fine, I'm thinking like, this is impossible.
I know. I'm like, I could not do this. But
well, the worst, I think worse than that is when they spray lava up and then it makes all the surfaces
yeah,
slick.
It's
well,
like
I was thinking about that
shit.
Because there's some sort of gelatin or soap or something
thick.
In there that like makes it slick, and you can see it. Especially like by about the halfway mark, everything's been like kind of jetting enough where every surface is super slippery.
I think they do it because they want the epic wipeouts.
Oh yeah,
obviously.
Oh no, definitely. And like, there's someone behind the camera hitting the buttons, because like there was a what was it? It was that one where they're moving from the table to like the steamer trunk.
Oh, everyone
every
got hit in the same spot.
They,
yeah. But as I was saying like before, the major clue that like yes, this is all stupid and they know it is you get $10,000, which is cool. It's something.
It's something. It's not that much.
Right. It's not that much. But just to kind of like rub it in, they give you this trophy, which is just like this lava lamp, which is so cheap.
It's a lava lamp that looks like a bad version of the cheapest lava lamp you could buy.
It's not even, the thing is, it's not a lava lamp because the way the lava lamp
there's like little beads in there.
No. Oh, right. Yeah. In this one, there's beads. In a real lava lamp, there's like a gel that melts and then it expands.
It's a wax, I think.
And yeah, whatever. This was like they're pumping air up into the bottom to make the little tiny like red beads come out of the volcano.
Right, it's like a little ring game type thing.
Yeah. It's so cheap. Somebody made it in like 15 seconds.
So there's this really great moment, and I won't say who the winners were, but the host is like he's listening to them be really really excited, and I think he mugs at the camera and he's just like, I don't think they know how much $10,000 is.
Oh yeah, because they were like, oh, we're gonna get a giraffe. Like, they're clearly just saying like stupid shit. Like, everybody knows. It's like the only game show where it's kind of seems like everybody's on the same page of like, this is fucking nothing, we're just gonna go in and have fun.
Yeah,
because Matt, I had a really similar experience on this where like we watched the first episode and Mindy's like not into it at all, and I'm just like, yeah, it feels like they're just like really trying to figure out like the formula, the editing, because everything feels kind of rushed and there's not a lot of ceremony to anything. And then we get to the second episode and we're just laughing the entire time. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. They know what they're doing.
Speaking of that, I guess this is a spoiler and we should definitely be wrapping up, but I need to get this out there. There is an episode where, it's like episode six or something. Like, it's a few down the line. Mm-hmm. And every episode,
doctors and nurses.
Well, every episode up until this point, it's been, you know, first one team, then a second team, and then a third team. This episode, for some reason, all of a sudden, they were like, two teams going head-to-head. And it's like, wait, why did you switch to two teams? And, like, nothing else changes. The game is absolutely the same otherwise. And then that episode ends, and then they go to a new episode, and it's like 1-2-3 again. And I'm like, did they lose footage? And they just, like...
They had to do it really fast.
Yeah, they had to, like... No,
somebody's pants came down halfway through, and they couldn't use any of it.
Yes, I think something happened, and they had to, like, lose one of the teams and just, like, say...
I love that one, because there's that one English guy, or maybe he's Australian or something, who's on the team, and he's like, there are characters on each team. That's what I love about it, because so, each team has somebody that's just like you grab onto.
So my theory was that they lost footage and that they had to like scrape something together, so they like recontextualize it as like two teams head to head or whatever. But then another episode happens and they do the first team, and there are supposed to be three teams in this one. So they do the first team, and then they go to the second team, and they go, we are joining our team halfway into the course. Like, they've already done like a large portion of the course, and like they're just picking up there, and they show like a couple like flashbacks of some things that happened. And it's like, what happened? Where did the footage go?
Oh my god, that's weird. The other thing, the final thing is like, I don't get why you kind of mentioned like that one person standing at the starting line. A lot of teams do that. A lot of teams go like one at a time,
right?
And they only start when like the first guy's like halfway through. Why don't they just all go at the same time? It's never made
sense
to me.
There was that one team of like 20 something guys, and like one of them had like long hair, like in a bun behind his head, and they all went at once, and it was kind of awesome because it was like seeing a strike team like descend on a building or something, because like all three of them went in completely different directions all at the same time, and like there was an energy to it that none of the other teams had for sure.
Yeah,
well, I recommend it. It's a stupid show, and it's really fun.
It's so dumb. I could talk about it all day long, and that's because I love it so much. And if it gets better, I will like it less.
Interesting. I totally kind of agree with that. Yeah.
I think there's room for it to improve where I'll still like it, but it's a small margin.
Oh, I will say the main commentator dude is genuinely great. Like, not he's great because one, he gets it like everybody else, and he's just like making really stupid jokes. Yeah. But he knows how to like play that, I think.
And halfway through the season, he starts doing the intro from the course where he's like reclining on a chair or something.
The whole show is changing.
All of a sudden.
As this show goes on, it changes every time. The last thing I want to say is at the beginning of every episode, he goes, you guys better watch out because the floor is, and then whoever is like like about to go, they have to yell out lava.
Yeah.
And that one team.
The one team goes, it's hot.
And it's just like, yeah, it's hot because the floor is lava.
That's so good.
Yeah, my one last thing. I just like
look, guys, this show's awesome. This show's, we can't stop talking awesome. About it.
I just want to, like, for people who are just getting into it, keep an eye out for the flight attendant team. For the flight attendant team, because I fucking love them. They were amazing.
Okay.
All right, well, we should move on. I was going to pitch my I Am Bread game show, but I think we've spent enough time on that.
Well, I mean, you just said it. That's the whole pitch.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
I Am Bread. There's a guy in a well, bread costume. The end.
Yes. Take the I Am Bread game. Guy works at a completely floppy bread costume, which he can't move in, and he has to literally like flop and roll across an obstacle course and get himself in the toaster. How is this game not a show not made already? Yeah, someone should make it. Okay, well, let's get to our pitches. Anyone want to go first?
Danish
okay. does.
Sure. So I don't know if I mentioned this on air last time, but it was one of the ideas I was kind of toying with, which we didn't actually pitch, but it's a little bit inspired by our classic episode, Punch Power, where you're in VR and you're punching, you know, dummies that are on Danish, motorized wheels Danish, around you.
Everybody remembers Punch Power.
Yeah. Yeah.
When are we getting the t-shirts, by the way?
Oh, we need to get t-shirts. So this idea is a VR game that interfaces with the real world. I recently played that game. It's like a tech demo called Wizards or something like that. It's a hand-tracking tech demo on Oculus Quest, and it's very cool. Like, there's still, you know, the hand-tracking is not perfect yet. It's a little bit laggy, and sometimes the motions that you do, it's like a 90% success rate, so there's still a little bit of error. But overall, I thought it was very cool. You go into this room, and you're, like, dipping your hand into, like, pots of, like, potion mix. It's like a very, you know, fantasy-themed thing. But what's really cool about it is that it changes your hands. Like, you dip your thing into magic potion, you pull it out, and now you have three fingers in an octopus hand.
Did this come out?
Yeah.
It's out?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I didn't know it was out. I wanted
It's a free demo. It's really good.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so, but like, seeing your hands be like octopus hands, it's like really cool and something I never experienced before. So anyway, this game is... inspired by that, I thought, okay, I want a game that's very tactile, that you use your hands, you know, and you're touching things. But unlike this, I want to grab actual things. So one idea was, you know, when you use the Oculus pass-through, if you, like, double tap or if you, like, step out of your zone, it maps the world in, like, you know, black and white footage into your thing. And it's 3D, and it's actually pretty decently close to real life. Like, you can use that thing, touch a... where you think it's going to be, and it's going to be there. It's not really disconnected. So the tracking, I think, is good enough where things in the real world are going to be where they are. So imagine you're in a VR set, you're sitting at a desk, and in front of you are like, you know, building blocks or like little, you know, alphabet blocks, like for kids, you know, and you have a bunch of them. And in VR, you have them too, except you're hand tracking them and you're picking up the block and you're placing them and you're like, you know, building a structure and you're doing it in virtual reality, but really in real life also. And then you get to start fucking with it. But like maybe one of the blocks like becomes a ghost block.
And, oh, no.
And you don't know which ones are real and which ones are not because only some of them you've prearranged to be actually in the real world. So like, let's say you go to grab one of the ghost blocks and obviously you grab like nothing. That could be some sort of like penalty. And so it could be like a puzzle game where you are removing blocks, moving them place to place, but you have to figure out like which ones are real and like you touch them and you know, kind of like confirm whether they're real or not. That's the basic germ of the idea. I don't really have like gameplay of it, but the idea of playing VR game, touching real things, but then some of them are not actually there.
Interesting.
So it's kind of inverting augmented reality. It's like augmented virtual reality.
Yeah, actually that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm thinking about the tracking and stuff, and you would need to have tracking on the blocks themselves because
you know what physics, I don't know if you do well I guess you're right
because physics like if you it, yeah. put it on the edge and it tumbles down, it's going to tumble differently in real life than it would in the simulation. So I'm thinking like, okay, if these kinds of games are going to be dependent on peripherals, like you want to have something that's like super easy to package, super easy to move, As far as like, you know, shapes off shelves and stuff.
You know what? I think all you would need to do is like paste on a real block 6 QR codes.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
And I think you'd get, okay.
And like, but like.
Not QR codes. Like, the camera's not that good. You need like a big shape, but like any big.
I get what you're saying, Danish, where it's like some sort of digital signifier showing which side of the block or whatever. But you could also do these things with spheres or like any, like you could do it with a fucking Bop-It and, or a Simon Says or whatever. So.
Right.
Yeah, this is super interesting. Can the headsets track that many things? Or does it matter?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
Something engaging, I would want like 6 or 7 blocks.
Yeah, 6 is a good number. I mean, let's just say that, let's remove that thing out of it and say, okay, there's a peripheral, you buy 6 blocks that are tracked easily. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess we don't need to be talking about like the hardware restraints for our fake.
But like, what are some ideas you could do with this basic concept of some things are real and some things aren't and stuff?
That's a good question, and I almost like need time.
Yeah, I know.
To come like, up with something.
You could like, okay, so imagine there's some sort of like gardening game or something, and each block is actually a pot with a plant sticking out the top, right?
That's cool.
So and I say that only in so much that the blocks don't have to just be blocks, and it doesn't have to just be ghost objects. You can put things on the objects, you can balance things on the objects in VR, and those balanced objects, you know, like imagine, you know, just really simply balancing a ball on a block. The ball is simulated physics and the block is real one-to-one tracking. And so those interactions are super interesting. And so you can kind of, it, you know, the idea of being locked into the peripherals is really should just be a base. Because I'm thinking like a city building game or like a traffic simulator game or something where you're moving blocks to affect like traffic patterns or something like that.
I think that's a different idea, but I think it's also a good idea. But it is different from what I'm thinking because it's not relying on what's there and what's not there. It's just using physical objects to play the game, which I think is good.
Yeah, I do think like there's value in what Jeff is saying, though, because to get this somewhere, we need to throw some shit at the wall. I was trying to think of like if this was a multiplayer game, and I'm imagining like two, like toddlers, I guess, because you said like the blocks, like sitting cross-legged on the floor. Maybe they are, you know, they're out in the same room. This is like a connection. So you can see the other player, but they're not really there. You are doing something with your blocks and they are doing something with their blocks, but you can see both blocks. So if the other person, maybe in your view, they are a ghost, but the blocks aren't, or they don't look like they're ghosts. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's say something happens and both of your like block towers fall over and now your blocks are all like mixed together. Now you don't know what the real blocks are. Like that's kind of where I'm trying to get is like, how do you trick the player with just 6 blocks into like not knowing which block is which?
Yeah, the multiplayer thing is super interesting.
Yeah. Is there something there where you're trying to construct something together or solve a puzzle together? But like, if you get any like, cross contamination of the blocks, like you're really starting to fuck yourself over.
Yeah. Well, I think we're kind of stuck in this puzzle solving mode, but we don't need to keep going. I guess it's just this idea that I really kind of think there's something there, and I think it'd be really fun. It's sort of a, I mean, back in the old AR days, like for the Nintendo 3DS, there was like those, and then PlayStation I, the first one. There was like Eye of the Beholder, where you'd put cards down and you'd watch magic shit come out of it, you know, in AR.
I think the 3DS did the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what made I was thinking of when Jeff, you were talking about like the City Builder, where like these things are blocks.
That's essentially AR, but doing it in a virtual reality landscape.
Yeah,
is there? It could be. There should be a competition, like. Is there a way of, if you're like two players playing like Jenga, but you have your own Jenga tower and they have their own and they're trying, you're just doing it like, you know, like if you're fucking alone and there's a Jenga tower in front of you, you're going to like fuck around with it. Like, is there something to like, it's almost like Jenga Tetris multiplayer where as you remove your blocks, can you somehow put them on top of their tower? Or, like, what so if? That
oh, I think
you're
I
trying
something.
To get them to accidentally knock their own tower over because, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I think I got something.
Oh, that's cool.
So, okay, there's two Jenga towers. And maybe, okay, because the Jenga tower is there in real life, but it's also being rendered in the headset. Mm-hmm. So what if I take a piece out of, like, the middle right and I put it on top, and now that corresponding piece disappears from the other person's tower. It's still there in real life, but it's gone in the virtual. So they can't see it. And now if they go to reach for a different piece, they might knock it because it's actually there, or they might be avoiding it because they can't see it. And that ends up causing them to unbalance their tower, or it could accidentally save them. And so as the game is going, pieces are disappearing and appearing on each other's towers, and they might not actually be there, or they might be there and not render.
Yeah,
okay, so that's an awesome base, because it's great, except the only issue is, like, game-wise, it's just then random whether you win or lose. So we start there, but then there's things you can do to, like, get a, like, expose certain sections of, like, reality.
Oh,
so you
every time you get a complete layer on top, it sends a pulse through your tower, and then you can, like, momentarily see everything.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad. So it's a little bit like, oh, that's good. It's like memory meets Jenga.
Yeah.
It might not even, and I like that idea. That's probably better than what I'm about to say. But, like, it might not even need to be that complex, because if the goal of the game is to just, like, you want to get your tower higher than the other player in X amount of time. Maybe that's the whole goal. So obviously that's going to be pushing you to, like, make mistakes because you're trying to go faster or whatever. But, like, if you have a large chunk of your tower that is hidden because the other player's done whatever they do to hide it, even if my job is to just, like, do some, like, in-game, like, hand motion or something to, like, re-reveal it, mm-hmm. that is just, like, wasting time. It is a way of getting mm-hmm. me to waste
right.
my time so that, like, there's more time pressure on me while they're, like, every second is going to count in something like this. And
or you can do, it's very, like, similar idea. Instead of doing time-based, you do turn-based, but you can use a turn to check the status of it. So you lose a turn.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that could work, too.
Yeah,
it's
I like that, too.
Pretty similar. Now we're onto something.
Yeah,
this is good.
This is really interesting.
It's really, like, mind-bendy. Like, I don't think I've seen anything like this before.
Yeah, because I'm imagining, like, you're playing and, like, I have pushed, the middle block out of...
Whoa, Matt?
Yeah, Matt, you dropped out.
Oh, my bad. All right. Yeah, maybe make a note there.
Yep.
But I'm imagining, like, maybe I've knocked the middle block out of a layer, like the third layer, and on their third layer, they've pulled the two side ones out. So now, like,
that whole layer is empty on their side.
It's empty on both of our sides, though.
Right? It's just floating, but one of them...
and you don't
that's
know
good.
Which one is there.
Oh check
so
it out.
Good.
What if like, you get... I don't know, maybe if you do something special or... You unlock something, you get an ability to send over a false positive or like a false negative. I guess I don't know which one it would be. Where when they
either way,
do,
both of those could totally fuck somebody up.
Yeah.
Yes. But like you only get one a game or something because it's so powerful, right? So you choose the right thing. And then when they look at their status, that's looks like it's there, but it's not. And that would be awesome too.
Yeah. Even if you could put, what if you could put a like a false layer on top? So like they're actually holding the block higher than they need to and then dropping it from higher.
Oh,
than
shit. But,
like, that could completely fuck up a tower.
So I think I really love these. I'm imagining in my head, okay, so, you know, you take a piece out, it disappears on the other person's. They take a piece out, it disappears on yours. I still like this idea of every time you complete a layer on top, it doing something. And so instead of doing this pulse, maybe that triggers, like, a false positive on their end, whether it's on top or it's, like, one of the pieces they've already taken or a piece that... is there that was just invisible.
Well, the like,
just like continually, because that keeps the turnaround on the mindfuckery a little bit faster than just like,
yeah, but that also makes
ability.
It way too hard. I think if there's a constant flow of false positives, that's like, it's kind of back to being too random of like, what do you win or lose?
Okay.
But yeah, there's something here.
Just to add an extra layer of complexity, and this is probably too much, but I want to put it out there. Could there be some sort of like weird narrative thing where you have your physical tower in the real world, and it's, you know, it's fucking real world, so you know what that's doing. But in the game world, is there a ghost version of that tower which can be, like, impulsed by other players somehow and, like, potentially knocked over even though that your real one hasn't fallen over? Like, I'm imagining this, like, like a ghost shadowy version of the real world one, sort of like shaking out a little bit, like it's a little less sturdy than your real life one, as some sort of like disconnect from what's actually going on.
It kind of sways a little bit in the virtual space, but it's not swaying in the real world.
Yeah, and it's almost like you have to worry about like the in-game physics and real-life physics somehow. It's a lot, and I don't even really know like what the goal is.
I mean, that could definitely be, that could be like some higher level or, you know, some hard mode or something.
Yeah.
Or like you might not know, right? Like,
Danish, that's a great point, like a hard mode. Like, I think that idea, the ideas about false positives, I think you could work that into like some sort of dynamic system, or like not dynamic system, but difficulty system, where like you can kind of choose the amount of fuckery going on.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Mario Tennis, where like you can do something to activate the piranha plant on the other guy's court. So like it's a disadvantage or an advantage for you. So yeah, maybe like all of these powers are just like power-ups, where if I do something special, if I... You know, almost like Peggle, where like if you hit the green thing, you get the power. So maybe there's some block, like it's a difficult block to move or some specific thing. If you do that, you get to unlock a power.
Oh, that's good.
Shit. Maybe
that power could be the
incentivized power. Blocks.
So like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. So
like Boom Block. Remember that game Boom Blocks? That game was
fucking
good.
Steven Spielberg.
I remember the articles and I was like, that looks stupid.
It was so, it's like maybe the most, one of the most played Wii games we played with. Friends.
So maybe like, it's kind of like Minesweeper, where the more blocks you remove around a piece, those pieces remaining start to get powered up. So it kind of encourages you to play risky in order to activate these special powers.
Yeah, and the special powers, so I was going to get to, so was like the special powers could be part of that dimension swaying, like, you know, yeah, something in the real world's being affected, like you're describing, like jittering or swaying, and it's throwing you off because... You know the game's not really, like, the reality's not really that way, but you have to wait till the thing is, like, centered, if it's swaying back and forth, you know?
I was also thinking, like, you could literally just, like, have an ability that makes it look like your enemy's tower is completely toppling over, even though it's not in real life, but they don't really know that, right? So, like, imagine your tower is toppling away from you, and you just kind of, like, reactively go, oh shit, and try to grab it, and you just ram your hand straight through the real tower.
Right. It's like that video of the dad on the 2x4 doing the balance VR game, and he dives into the TV.
Yeah, like you're basically trying to kill people at this point.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, going back to the very, very first thing you said, Matt, the image of two people sitting on the floor facing each other with the peripherals in front of them, I think that's exactly what this is.
It's very powerful imagery.
Yeah, and especially the toddlers, because the VR headsets are as big as their whole bodies. Like, it's very cute.
Yeah, so, and you could unlock, like, new toddler parts and build your own toddler.
Okay, character customization. Now we're talking.
Now Jeff's in. Do you guys remember, like, I don't know, 60 years ago, when, like, the Oculus DK1 was still, like, not even out yet. And the very first demos were coming out, and journalists were, like, being, you know, given these demos. One of them was two-player, like, tossing a ball back and forth, but then one of them grows large and one of them grows small, and it's, like, it shows you, like, you can be playing the same space, but just by perspective
changes.
Oh, that's
changes. Right. I do
that's
remember
interesting,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was, like, literally the first thing they did, and that would be interesting of, like, what if that's part another power, like, the Jenga, I guess it wouldn't map at all, but having the Jenga be, like, really big or small or, like, maybe a third player is like climbing the tower.
Okay, so this is interesting. Maybe it's a four-player game,
right,
and two of the players are just climbing each respective tower.
I think we should. I think that's amazing, and we should just end it there.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
someone should make this for sure.
Also, it is one of our ideas that it seems very achievable. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, not with the
it's achievable. Like, you could do a completely virtual version of this, but
yes,
I think
that's
shines
what I mean. Yeah.
If somebody develops a Jenga tracking app for the Oculus.
Yeah,
Jenga
honestly
trackers.
like you know, I'm thinking about this and like, okay, how many pieces is there in a Jenga set? Like 60?
I think like 305.
However many there are, like is it possible to, you know, with like a digital code on each one that's unique to track all this stuff? Like, my mind is racing about the technical.
It seems very doable because that's the Vive Room, or again, early days.
Oh,
the Vive
Room,
they had like trackers everywhere to, like, you know, recreate the room, the office room that they
were. I mean, there's definitely somebody smart enough, way smarter than us, that would be able to get like a Microsoft Kinect camera and point it at a Jenga block tower and make it work.
I mean, this is totally pointless because I don't know the guy's name, but I follow someone on Twitter, which I retweet often. He does like the coolest like AR, VR hand like experiments. Have you seen this? Like one of them where like he's behind bars and there's something he has to like get to in the prison cell. And so like he throws his hand and it detaches from his wrist. His hand goes flying. And then he uses his hand tracking to like crawl like thing style.
Yeah, like moving his fingers in
real
life.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So like that guy does like amazing stuff. I should just tell him to make this game.
Hey, can you do some? Here's $15. It's all we have.
I mean, someone should make this. This is
someone,
so good.
Yeah. Someone should absolutely make this.
All right, Jeff, what do you got?
Yeah, so really different track. This is, so, okay, feel free to cut this out later, Danish, but this is based on the concept of ludonarrative dissonance in games. And I know that's a four-letter word for games, and from where I'm sitting, I don't think it should be. And so this game is inspired by that.
I don't want to take part in that conversation, but I disagree.
I mean, that's fine. So all that to say is I have come up with a game that I think partially solves this, or at least moves it towards a solution, and it is Terminator X Death Stranding.
A Strand game. Now I'm back on board.
So this is a true Strand game, but
they usually are.
Yeah. I wrote down a bunch of stuff. I'm going to read through it real quick because I was super inspired by this.
Is this our first written pitch?
No, I write all my pitches down.
But you never read them.
I haven't read them in a long time because I've...
No, he did. Yeah. Yeah, you did.
I've been focusing so much on like a single mechanic, but this one... there's a variety
of
moving
story
pieces.
Time?
No,
Jeff did,
no, no, no.
Jeff did some world building, and we got to sit tight for like 45 minutes.
There is a little world building, but it's in service of one of the main mechanics.
All right, go.
So you play as a time traveler from a distant future in which some global war destroyed everything. So the idea is you have to travel
back
in time. So
like 2025.
Yeah. You have to travel back in time to stop the war. So... super simple, classic concept, very Terminator. So the player starts the game and they're in the middle of the climax of this war. They're in like the decisive battle that decides one way or the other. So they pop in through their time bubble in the middle of this battlefield and they're there to save the world. So the main mechanic the player has to interact with things around the world is what I call future morphine, which is just like a health potion, a health serum, like in any video game. And so if you inject somebody, you can save them like instantly. Like they could be missing, you know, a leg and an arm, and you inject this and then they're okay.
Just say nanomachines.
Sure, nanomachines. Yeah, perfect. But the reason it was future morphine is because if you do a second injection, you kill them, just like an overdose.
Okay, that's bad.
So this is like the main interaction. So you have to traverse the battlefield and you're choosing who to save or who to kill as you're trying to figure out like what this battle is about, you know, ideologically, like who's in charge of it, who's calling the shots and stuff, and you're going to work your way to one camp. So once you figure out what it is, like maybe there's some general who has like this huge, you know, like personal grudge against, you know, something on the other side or some idea, and he's calling the shots with the radio. So like in this level, you might go and like steal the radio. Now he can't issue orders anymore, but you know, he's the cause of it. So this is where the time travel stuff comes in. You can jump back in his specific timeline to a pivotal moment in his life that caused this, you know, anger or rage or, you know, ideological hate that has inspired him to like lead this battle. So you're going back in time, and you're kind of like exploring whatever situation that is, whether it's like some sort of like console meeting or, incident that happened in another battle. And so it's almost got like a Dishonored feel in that sense, where you're, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and then like find the linchpin event and change it.
It sounds like Psychonauts meets Butterfly Effect.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a really great analog. So here's where the twist comes in. This game is operating on the time travel theory where every time you travel back in time, it's not your past. It like splinters the timeline. So now you're in an alternate timeline. And the reason this is important is because the future has sent back, you know, hopefully hundreds of thousands of people, you know, the players back in time. And even though they're all coming from the same present, when they go into the past, that's splintered into alternate timelines. So all these players have gone back simultaneously and they're each trying to fix it to create a new, better future. So the strand game part comes in where every good thing that a player does, so like let's say they save somebody on the battlefield, that leaves a pickup in other people's games. But every time they go back and like maybe they assassinate with this, you know, future morphine, like one of the generals or somebody on the battlefield, that leaves a time specter in other people's games. And that time specter can't be killed, and it'll stalk the player if they get too close to it. And it's like a small radius. So it essentially creates these like no-go zones in the levels. And then, let's see.
So, okay, let's pick that apart for a second.
I think that's the end of it.
I just imagine Jeff was rifling through like 500 pages.
Well, let's pick apart that Spectre thing. Okay, yeah. So if I go back and kill this guy, you know, before he does anything bad. Now, in that moment in time, I've sort of locked that. The Spectre appears in that moment in time for everybody else. So if someone else tries to go save him or something like that, or I guess for them, he's not dead, right?
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying, because you're overlapping things, right? Because like they have no longer have a choice on that person because they've turned into the Spectre. No, you're totally right. There's a mechanical conflict there. So maybe it's not one-to-one.
I was trying to find the name of my high school history teacher, because he reminded me of a phrase he drilled into our heads, which was multiple factors of causation.
Yes.
Because a lot of times when you're doing like a test on World War II or something, it's always like, what caused World War II to happen? And his thing was like, there was no one thing, multiple factors of causation. It was probably going to happen eventually, but like, you know, there's like a billion fucking factors. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I missed a portion of your pitch because I was...
it's okay. I want to address that specifically because...
Well, first, my question is this multiplayer in any way?
It's multiplayer only in like a strand game sense. You're not actually... It's not co-op.
Okay, interesting. Because I do have an idea on that front, but say what you were about to say.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, some of the themes that I thought this game could explore really well is exactly that, the complexities of conflict and human motivation, and how sometimes a good thing that you do can cause a bad thing, and sometimes a bad thing can turn something into a good thing. And so, in my mind, you're not just going back in time, you might be going back and forth. And kind of to your point where like a million things caused, you know, World War II, I'm envisioning like 3 to 5 main timelines that you're going back and forth to that kind of, you know, meet each other at different moments.
You know what this is? I just realized it's a Until Dawn game or whatever like that studio is.
Dawn?
No.
No, I know what you're talking about, where it's like a multi-choice story.
Yeah, yeah, thing. Exactly. It's basically the better Quantic Dream. Let's just say Quantic Dream games. But basically, it's like this branching, but good. But like with depth and characters. It's exactly that structure. It's a very narrative-based, decision-based game that has many, many different endings. But the twist is now time travel, where you can go back and change it and go forward and see what the results are, go back and change it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. I feel like those games have this structure. I didn't play it, but Detroit Become Human did some more interesting things where you get glimpses of like what would happen if you choose different things, which is kind of interesting. But this takes it to the whole another level where it's literally time travel. It seems like a logical next step for those types of games.
Well, so I'm going to pitch something kind of crazy for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine, if you will, an AI so powerful that it can take all of these, like, I don't know, like, how many fucking characters would be in, like, it's like thousands, right? Because it's like individual, like persons and like individual generals and, like, you know, like
yeah
as far as like AI goes, AI characters,
it would be like a total war game where every character was like fleshed out to the limits of like Solid Snake or something,
right? So exactly, so imagine, like, this is a fucking huge leap. Imagine you could somehow like create a way where the AI is gonna sort of create a backstory for all the characters dynamically, so it's not like you have to hire 10 billion writers to like write all of these characters.
But I have these million monkeys on typewriters. What am I doing with them? There we go,
we're good. But so like any given person, maybe you can jump back into their life and get like snippets of something that's going on. The whole point of this is like the way these people interact is like this AI could potentially be like, okay, in the absence of this character, we can fast forward and be like, didn't really have much of an effect on anything. In the absence of these characters, maybe that's how you handle it. Like, you do have like a large group of characters that have more major impacts. Anyway, the whole point of what I'm getting at here is, if it is a multiplayer game, and maybe it's the multiplayer game on the level of like Dark Souls, where you see like other ghosts going around and doing other stuff. Yeah. If I go back in time and I kill this character or change their life or whatever, and then I come back up to the present of the battle, I'm now in an alternate timeline, just like you said. Mm-hmm. But maybe other people have done things and they ended up in this alternate timeline as well. So like you're sort of like narrowing down what timeline you're in. And
it's like fucking dynamic matchmaking.
Yeah, kind of, except it's like based on your decisions, and there's probably only like one or two like good outcomes, and like over the course of this time, you and like a handful of other players maybe are slowly making your way towards this like optimal outcome based on the changes that you're making in the past. I think it's
cool.
The idea
is almost
like
journey-esque.
One of those things where you can like beat the game in like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
if you happen to choose the right guy or whatever, right? Like, general. So like,
but it's the exploration of things that keeps it interesting.
Yes, and it, like that whole thing of like everybody wants to play a Mass Effect game and come out of it with like a really unique story, right? But there's only so many things that can be like hand programmed or made in a game like that, where, you know, a lot of people be like, I fucked Garrus or whatever, and like, yeah, so did like 300,000 other people. Yeah. So like this, like I'm really always attached to the idea that like, could I come out of a game and have a truly unique experience that like most people never even came close to touching, because they're in a completely alternate timeline that I'm just never going to be able to see at this point.
You know what's interesting?
And the only way that would happen would be with the AI thing. Like,
yes,
you could never.
Yeah, exactly. So,
what's really interesting about this, and I'm a little stuck on the idea of matchmaking based on the decisions you make, and like that being the, you know, the connective tissue of the strands. If you did that and it worked, the more you played and the closer you got to the solution, the less populated your world would be. Like,
exactly.
You have fewer and fewer multiplayers. And that's super interesting because, you know, like, again, going back to these themes, like, I don't think there's a single solution. Like, you know, and this is a made up war, this is a made up conflict, and like all the timelines would be fictional. But of course, like, it's, you know, everything's political, whatever. But there's no one solution that could lead to a future where that war never happened, or where the Earth wasn't destroyed. And so, yeah, with this AI, a powerful enough AI that was a Google Dream, or what is that?
The one
you're talking about.
Dogs?
I think you mean devs.
Yeah, devs.
Yeah,
dev. No, it totally is devs. And so yeah, you have the devs engine.
We gotta get that first. That's the first step, is to go
so, yeah,
into devs.
You take the Ludens engine from Death Stranding, and then you put on the devs AI suite, and then we drag
and drop our Battlefield folder into the devs computer.
Yeah, yeah. But like, yeah, the loneliness that you get with that, I think, echoes the Terminator inspiration really well, because John Connor, of course, sends Kyle Reese, and he's the only person on Earth who knows what's going to happen. Like, that's super lonely, right? And, like, that's kind of what causes Sarah Connor to go a little apeshit and, like, militarize everything, is because she's the only one who's aware of Judgment Day. And capturing that with this mechanic is amazing. Like, I fucking love that, Matt.
Yeah, and there could also be, like let's say I find my... Because I think a big part of your game is, like, sort of, like, information gathering, where you're trying to figure out, like, who is the main person that I could approach or whatever to, to at least, like, start whatever I'm doing, right? Like, that guy seems important. I'm going to go back in time in his life. So I do that, and I've decided I want to stop his brother from getting hit by a car. I don't fucking know. So I go back and I see this about to happen, but then, like, maybe another player had the same idea and now they're there as well, and we could either, like, work together, or we could, like, maybe they have a different idea and they're, like, actively working against me, and it's almost like I want to say, like, Sliders or something, where it's like you've gone back in time and maybe you have the same goals, maybe you have different goals, and, like, you just get to see how these things play out. And when you take that idea as, like, your core idea, and then you filter it all the way back up to whatever timeline you ultimately end up on, like, your like, final approach to, like, changing this whole thing, and maybe you have just, like, organically grouped up with, like, a handful of people who, like, your goals,
Time Warriors,
goals have, like, aligned just, like, super organically.
The Guardians of the Galaxy.
It kind of is, right? Like, it's like we're all, like, different, but we have proven that we have, like, almost the exact same goals in all of this. Like, we've gone about these things the same way, and by pure chance we have all ended up in the same timeline.
That's kind of beautiful.
It's, like, crazy.
And so I'm envisioning, like, something, you know, what is it called? Didactic UI, or a diegetic UI, where the character has, maybe it's the same thing. Like, it's a watch and it's got a circle. And when the game starts out, you know, and you're coming back from this, you know, wasteland of a future, the circle is all noise, you know, kind of like a musical waveform. It's just all noise. And as you get closer and closer, the circle gets, like, more and more solid and more clean. And so, like, even if you're back, you know, like, three time jumps in, you know, your seventh timeline, like, you can kind of see, like, okay, like, I'm really close to something here. Like, I know what I'm doing is going to impact the future in a way that I want it to. And so, like, almost like giving a hot or cold feedback to the player on, like, where they are.
I mean, that's a cool visual, I guess. It's hard to know. You're saying that this indicator would just push you slightly toward the ideal solution.
It would help you know if you're going in the right direction.
You kind of you want to know if, like, you kind of want to have, like, a hint at what kind of effect you're going to have.
Right, yeah. Because you could get like, especially with the Devs AI engine that we've developed, you could really get lost going
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of whittling down the number of people as you get further and further along the timeline? Because any sort of hint will inevitably funnel people.
I think, I guess it, like, if you think about it,
that's true.
Like an exponential curve where, like, it only really starts to solidify, like, as you're getting really close to the final push, maybe. I don't know, like, because what I'm thinking is it's just really easy to get lost, like, and I'm not saying, like, you're on the battlefield and as you get close to the general that you need to interact with, it, like, closes into a circle. I'm not saying that at all. I think
that's kind of a feature, not a bug.
Yeah,
like, getting lost.
I think that's fair. My solution, though, because that could pose a problem for people who are, like, really trying to be, like, completionists or whatever.
Because,
like,
what I'm thinking is you get back in a timeline and you do something and you've actually done it, but, like, you can't know that unless you, like, backtrack all the way up.
Well, so let's say, like, you have an idea and you go back in time and you complete your objective, and then you go back forward again to see, like, what the what the fruits of your labors have been. And you find out, oh shit, I made everything like way worse by doing that. Yeah. Is my goal now to try to change other things to bring it back in line? Or can I go back in time like 5 minutes to before I was last time and kill myself and stop myself from doing that? And then
yes,
go back. Like,
that.
I think
that's
more
interesting because again, like I think the core interaction is like live or die, right? Like you're helping somebody or you're stopping somebody. So if you put yourself into that equation, I think that's really interesting. Almost like the whole Star Trek thing where like technically every time they use the teleporter, they die. And like like the person that comes out on the other end is new, like kind of doing that organically. Or Primer actually is a great example of that.
Oh, that's interesting. Travel. I also so
because not, that I think plays into this whole ambiguous morality thing where like,
well,
you have to stop yourself, but you're yourself, you know, your motivations.
I think I have a solution to that too. Maybe the rapper is like, okay, you can only go back in time in this universe. You choose the thing you're going to do and then you go back and you do it. And then you basically in the fiction of the game, you die. And then you are then fast forward back up to your real time birth. You were reborn in this new time. You wake up, you know, blah blah blah. That is the method.
Oh, so
in
it's
which,
a one way trip.
Yeah, that's the method in which you reset time. You have to be reborn again in the new timeline. So once that happens and you get back up to this war, that's when you get to see like what happened. And so like maybe that is like that is what's causing you to have like a different life or whatever. And that's what.
I'm sorry. This is going to introduce some ludonarrative dissonance because you as the player will remember the past life, but will you as the character remember the past life?
That's interesting. Now,
that is interesting, and this whole thing was supposed to get away from. So that's interesting. I wonder if...
Because I'm reborn and I'm five.
I really like the idea of like of time, because originally I was thinking about it as like a, you know, a two-way street. But thinking about it more like a river and like, you know, all of a sudden giving into the flow to go back to the future. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
Well, here's what happens. At the beginning of the game, somebody goes, hey, here's a pill. It's going to remind you what you did in your past life. And you're like, you take the pill. You're like, oh, shit. Yeah, that is what I did in my past life. And I fucked this all up. So I'm going to go back in time and kill myself. And I'll be right back.
Solved.
Boom. All this being said, I do love the idea of like, basically like an MMO with splitting timelines where
it
filters you down into like this smaller and smaller group of people. You get to, that whole thing I'm fucking in love with. I would do
that. Yeah, that's awesome. My only thing is I just think we can make this without the devs engine if we just change it from a Battlefield to like something smaller scope like Looper, where it's just like it doesn't have to be a gangster story, but you know, like, there's 8 characters, there's 12 characters, and then they have tons of branches and do different things. That actually makes it feasible.
Yeah, and again, like my original thought on that before devs even entered the picture was that like most of the people in this world are just set dressing essentially, and you're only going back through like a handful of people's lives.
Yeah.
So I think
in that case,
you can make it any scale. Just I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, in that case, someone should make this. All right, Matt.
Man, I got to do like a short one because this has been going, huh?
We take whatever time we need.
Do we? Do we, though?
I think a short one would be nice.
Oh, gosh, guys, I don't have any short ones. What if
we
just want to
wrap
it
and save
one
for next week?
I mean, like, we've done two idea episodes.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that.
All right, here's what I'm going to say. Guys, I cannot follow up those ideas, and we've been going long. I think they're both fucking awesome ideas. So I'm going to take a break this week, and I'll come back.
Yeah, save it for next week. Yeah, awesome.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, you guys got some recos for this week?
Oh, God, I also don't have recos.
So I got some recos. All
right.
One of them is kind of a known entity, at least between us, but Ars Technica's... Well, that's a weird plural or possessive to make.
Yeah.
Ars Technica on YouTube, and of course, Ars Technica is a tech industry publication. Their YouTube is amazing. They have this war story series that goes through game dev, like running the spectrum, kind of like Noclip, but it's more like one-on-one interview stuff, and it's really, really good. So anyone out there who's obviously you're interested in game dev because you're listening to us, so that's a really great thing to just zone out on.
Is anyone listening to us?
I'm pretty sure we got it.
Sorry, what I was listening.
The other thing was a documentary. It's been on YouTube for a little bit. Or I'm sorry, it's been on Hulu for a little bit. The Never Surrender, the Galaxy Quest documentary, is amazing. It's so good. So highly recommend
very
that.
Cool. Yeah, I'll watch that for sure. Mine is... so I am... almost done with the Last of Us 2, and it's been I've been avoiding trailers or avoiding reviews even, and just hearing very light things, and just I get the sense that there seems to be a lot of controversy about story decisions and what the game is trying to do, and some people like it, some people don't. A couple friends of mine, one of them is on the not so great side, one of them is on the very positive side. They have recorded a podcast discussing it, and I'm can't wait to listen to it. As soon as I finish the game, I'm going to do it. The podcast is called Culturally Relevant. It's actually a great podcast. It covers all sorts of different topics, from real life news events to like the pandemic, and also just artist interviews of different directors and writers. So it's just a great all around culture podcast. And so their most recent episode is a review of Last of Us 2. And so if you've played the game, if you have thoughts on it, give that a listen. I think it'll be a very good discussion. I actually haven't listened to it yet, so it's a weird thing to recommend, but I'm sure it'll be good.
I got a recommendation. Do you guys want to hear it?
Yeah. Lay it on us.
I'll allow it.
This is one of my all-time favorite YouTube channels. It is it's one of those ones that I look forward to. It's a niche market, but it's called How to Drink. The host is named Greg. I don't know his last name. I don't know if he's ever said his last name. I probably just forgot. It is don't take the name literally. Everybody knows how to drink. This is how to, it's basically a mixology, I guess, YouTube channel. But he's sort of the Binging with Babish of alcoholic drinks, in that he'll find drinks from like TV shows and popular media and try to create a drink that is based on that. Like if there's enough information, he'll try to create it exactly as it was in whatever the source was. And then if it's more like recently he did a Last Airbender episode, where I guess they have something called Cactus Juice, and
oh shit,
basically he takes that concept and just tries to make a drink, like a good tasting drink that is nice. Yeah, that kind of sticks to the heart of the source, I guess. He's a really good host. He makes drinks. He makes me want to drink maybe too much. because every time he makes something, I'm like, oh god, that looks delicious. I'm gonna order a bunch of shit off of Drizzly or whatever. Yeah, very, very entertaining. He also does like Twitch streams and stuff, but I think his YouTube is really where it's at.
And what was that called again?
How to Drink.
Very good. There's a YouTube channel I used to watch a lot called The Modern Rogue, and their whole
stuff together.
Oh yeah, because they have a lot of mixology episodes. Yeah, so that's cool.
What's Modern Rogue about, real quick? Fast record.
You guys remember the most interesting man in the world, Dos Equis guy? Basically, the whole channel is like, hey, how do we become the Dos Equis guy? So it's like, how do you do survival skills? How do you learn how to mix a drink? How do you learn how to hack things? It's like all sorts of just little tricks and how to make prison wine. You know, it's just like everything. It's just how to be an interesting person and learn new skills and how to make a... like. They did a really cool thing of how to make your homemade gas mask, which is really cool. So, yeah, check it out. Modern Rogue. This drink one sounds really cool, too. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Someone Should Make This. Thanks for listening. You can tweet at us at Make This Podcast, and it would really help us out if you gave us a rating on iTunes.
And if you have any comments, a game idea of your own, or think one of our ideas already exists, please email us at someoneshouldmakethispodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you to Mariachi Entertainment System for letting us use their music for our theme song. You can hear more of their music at mariachimes.com.
Until next week, we've done the hard part.
Now someone should make it.
And now someone should make it.